This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Teamsters Local 206, helping Oregon's working families fight for good jobs and a better future. For information on how the Teamsters can help you in respect at work, the number is 503-251-2344. Also, AFSCME Local 88, protecting worker rights and fighting to improve the wages and working conditions of members who work for Multnomah County, Central City Concern, Transition Projects, and American Friends Service Committee. More information at 503-239-9858 or www.local88.ws. Stay tuned for Labor Radio.
Good evening, brothers and sisters and KBOO listeners, and welcome to Labor Radio here on your community station, KBOO. This is your host for tonight, Kevin Card, your friendly neighborhood letter carrier, and tonight we have a great show. Yesterday morning, I was down in the North Parks blocks looking at the assembled throng ready for the big pride parade that marched through Portland yesterday, and it was just very exciting. A huge cross-section of our community showed up for that. And that's what we're here to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about that cross-section between the labor movement and the gay community and how the two act in sync to make workplaces better for everybody here in the state of Oregon. Tonight we're going to have three guests. We're going to have Cleve Jones from down in California, who's going to talk about a program that he has put together with the Unite Here folks called the Sleep with the Right People campaign. In the studio, I have with me Joe Keir, who is a business rep with Maecenas District Lodge number 24 and also co-chair of Portland's local Pride at Work contingency. And later we'll be speaking with Ann Montague with Service Employees International Union Local 503 to talk about what they've done to try and incorporate civil rights into their contracts. But first, Joe, let me welcome you to Labor Radio. And Cleve, do we have you on the line yet? I guess not.
I'm here.
Oh, Cleve. Well, Cleve Jones, welcome to Labor Radio.
Thank you. My pleasure.
So, Tell us about this, I think, probably the snappiest-sounding campaign I've ever heard, the Sleep with the Right People campaign, and how you got involved with it and what its goal is.
Well, sure. You know, I'm from San Francisco. I lived there for 25 years, and I have many friends in Local 2, a hotel and restaurant union there. Local 2 has been a really important partner with the gay community for many, many years, decades, actually. And I was up there last summer and doing some volunteer work because 14 of the hotels there locked out their workers 2 years ago, and they've been working without a contract ever since. And the more I got informed about the Hotel Workers Rising campaign, the more excited I got about it. I think it's probably one of the most significant efforts by organized labor since the 30s. And I think that the LGBT community has a real stake in this issue. People often ask me, well, why do you see this as a gay issue? Why should gay people support these workers? Well, first, everybody should support these workers. Their demands are just. These are people who work backbreaking jobs in a sector of the economy that is important to the entire city in which they're located. Everyone in San Francisco is impacted by the tourist economy. So first and foremost, we should be with them because it's the right thing to do. Secondly, there's huge numbers of lesbians, gay men, bisexuals, transgender people working in the industry. We all know that. And thirdly, the union that represents these workers, Unite Here, has a very long history of really substantive support for LGBT causes and candidates. They give money, they provide volunteers, they support our efforts, they fight the anti-gay initiatives with us. So many of the achievements that we've made over the last several years have been with the help of labor. And then for me, the final reason is that these are really scary times. The people in control in Washington are really, I think, crazy and evil, and we need to take the country back. So I think all of us who want to restore democracy to the United States, who want to see poor people and working people have a fair shot at the middle-class dream, we should be seeking every opportunity to build these kinds of coalitions. So I wanted to make sure that gay people were out in front in supporting the hotel workers. We spend some $60 billion a year in the gay community on travel. All of the hotel chains, especially Hilton, are marketing aggressively to the lesbian and gay community. I want them to understand that we're not just a market, we're a movement.
Well, that's awesome, Cleve. And just speaking personally, my son is a member of the local Unite Here local. Works at one of the local hotels. And when I told him about this thing, he was extremely excited because he sees the you know, luckily he comes from a family that understands the connection between workers and civil movements. I mean, this is just another part of a civil right movement, which is what the labor community has done well at sometimes and struggled at others. Tell me about your previous experience in working with the gay community, because you really have a fascinating history.
Well, I got started back in the 70s as a student intern in the office of Supervisor Harvey Milk, who I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of. He was the first openly gay man to be elected to public office in the United States. He was assassinated back in 1978. One of the things that Harvey did during his brief tenure in public office before he was killed was to build a relationship with the Teamsters. This was back in the days when most gay people felt that unions were hostile to us. We were, to be honest, I think we were frightened of them. And Harvey reached out to the Teamsters when they were organizing a strike and a boycott of the Coors Brewery in Colorado. Harvey put the two together because, yes, the Coors family was engaging in union busting. They were dividing the workers, intimidating workers, terrible working conditions. But it was also a family that was pumping millions of dollars of their profits into every right-wing, fundamentalist, Christian, anti-gay campaign you could think of. Anti-gay, anti-woman. I mean, they're despicable. And Harvey was the first one to make that connection and say to gay people, we need to get Coors beer out of our bars. And he did it, you know. I mean, for years and years and years, you could not find Coors beer in any gay bar in the United States. And if you asked for it, people would look at you like you were crazy. And to this day, the Coors family feels obliged to give hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars every year to AIDS organizations and gay community centers to counteract the effects of a boycott that hasn't even been active in 20 years. So I learned a lot from that. I've also been very involved in AIDS work. I started the AIDS Quilt back in the 80s. And, you know, here again, the unions are our natural ally. All working people know the fear of losing your health care. All working people can relate to the reality that the medications that are keeping me alive today cost $2,300 a month. You know, if I don't have health insurance, I die. It's that simple. So I just, to me, this is such an obvious connection, and I hope that sleepwiththerightpeople.org will serve as a focal point for people in the community to learn more about the hotel workers' struggle, understand why when the hotel workers win, as they're going to, all of our communities are going to benefit.
So how long has Sleep with the Right People been active for?
Oh, we just got online about, I guess it's been up for 3 weeks now, and it's still growing. We have a place for openly gay elected officials to add their endorsements. We've got a couple dozen up already, including Congressman Barney Frank. We've also set up an interactive portion of it, which we're still, fooling around with to try to make it better. And if any of your listeners have any ideas on that, but we want to provide a forum where LGBT workers can meet each other, discuss issues, talk about strategies, issues relating to homophobia perhaps in the workplace, issues they think maybe the union ought to be aware of that they don't know yet. I think another thing that people need to understand is that increasingly it's under union contracts that LGBT workers are getting employment discrimination protection. In all of this, there's so many states that don't have any protections yet, but LGBT workers are getting that protection when they're working with a union contract.
That's an important issue. That is, I think, where unions have an ability to step in where government fails, and the ability to negotiate broad-ranging language in local contracts. And I have with me someone who does that kind of thing. His name is Joe Keir. He's been a machinist for 22 years. He is a business representative with Machinist District Number 24 and a co-chair of the Portland Pride at Work. Joe, welcome to Labor Radio.
Thank you, Kevin. I'd like to ask Cleve for a second if you could talk about the support from the unions for this effort. I see that it's on the Pride at Work webpage where you can do the connection to your website, and I'm wondering what the response has been from the unions that you're working with.
Well, I'm really glad you asked that. When I started this, I wasn't sure. I was really curious to see how this would be received. And the support has been overwhelming from rank-and-file workers, from the leadership. It's really been gratifying. The Unite Here homepage links to the sleepwiththerightpeople.org. Of course, many of the LGBT groups are linking. I kind of, took that for granted, but I didn't take it for granted that we would receive the kind of support we're getting across the board. And I've been traveling. I'm working throughout the United States and Canada on this campaign, so I've been working with the Labor Council in Toronto, with Local 5 in Honolulu, Local 2 in San Francisco, been to Chicago, and everywhere I go, I find really heartwarming responses from rank and file, and also from the leadership, from the elected presidents of the locals. Without exception, they have done everything they could to offer support and inform their membership and people in their communities about this project.
What does it take to get the word out to just the community in general, to get the LGBT community focused on this campaign, Sleep with the Right People?
Well, it's tough. So many people think of the gay community as some sort of monolithic structure, which is, ridiculous. There is really no gay community. There are many LGBT communities, each with their events, and this is one of the things that I'm focusing on. Everybody can support this campaign. You can support this campaign by paying attention when you book your hotel reservations, when you're traveling for business or vacation. But also, in the LGBT community, in every city and town in this country, almost every month, there's some sort of event. It could be the royal court system having a drag ball. It could be the gay rodeo. It could be the lesbian Democrats. It could be, any number of groups. But every single community has these groups that book hotel venues for their events. All of them need to be paying attention to this. And I think the best way to get the word out is through the Internet and through word of mouth, just getting people talking about it, writing letters to the editor. If your listeners think that this is an important and worthwhile effort, they could write letters to the editor. I'm trying to get coverage by the mainstream press because a whole lot of LGBT folk aren't receiving, magazines like The Advocate and Out, where we do have paid advertising. But I think the guerrilla marketing is going to really be the key to this. Obviously, I don't have a large budget. If I did, I'd buy full-page ads in every gay newspaper in the country. I think it's that important. But I need help. So if there's listeners out there who would like to be part of this, I would welcome that. And they can reach me through sleepwiththerightpeople.org.
Cleve, what are some of the hotels that people should be avoiding?
Well, it's important to stay tuned. This situation is really developing rapidly. Right now, unfortunately, it appears that the Hilton chain is really digging in their heels. And I think people really need to be paying attention to the Hilton chain. But one of the things that is so exciting about this effort is that it's really got a lot to do with globalization. And the reality is that in the past, many of these hotels in local communities were owned by families or businesses that did, in fact, have roots in those communities. But over the years, almost all of those hotels have now been purchased by one of four major hotel chains. So that if you're a housekeeper at, let's say, the Los Angeles Airport Hilton, and you've got terrible working conditions, skyrocketing injury rates, cuts in your benefits, and you go on strike, even if you succeed in shutting down that hotel for weeks, it makes very little difference to the bottom line of the Hilton chain, because they've got so many other properties throughout North America and Europe. So what the union has done, and I think it's brilliant, it helps to illustrate the negative effect of globalization on American workers, but also offers all of us a strategy on how to fight back. And so what they did was, as they negotiated contracts over the last several years, they have lined them up so that this summer, this year, many of them across the country are expiring at the same time, particularly in San Francisco, Chicago, Honolulu, Toronto is a big one. If anybody's planning on coming down to San Francisco for Pride, we'd like to ask you to avoid the Holiday Inns at Civic Center and Fisherman's Wharf. We'd like you to avoid the Hyatt Regency, the Mark Hopkins, the Omni, the Park Hyatt, the Fairmont, and the Hilton, the Grand Hyatt, the Four Seasons. All of those are among 14 hotels that locked their workers out 2 years ago, and they're still without a contract. If folks are going down to L.A., the Hyatt Regency and the Glendale Hilton, we'd like you to avoid. In Chicago, the Intercontinental. But there's a good list that we're going to keep regularly updated on that website. So when people go to the website, they should just click on the box that says the right people, not the wrong ones. And when they make their travel plans, they can avoid the hotels. I think at some point within the next month to 6 weeks, we're probably going to see the strike votes happening. And then there will be more formal announcements of boycotts. But right now, they can get the current list at the website.
And this is a huge issue for especially, it seems like a convergence of the immigration issue goes right along with this, because I know that the local Unite here in Portland, when you go to one of their meetings, they have to have about a half a dozen translators just to talk with the membership, because there are so many different ethnic groups represented who work in these establishments.
Absolutely. And I got to tell you, this is one of the things that makes me most proud to be associated and working with Unite here. The debate around immigration has really become, I think, very, very disturbing. It's tapped into a really deep vein of racism in this country. And I think, like many Americans, I was very heartened and moved and really overjoyed to see the turnout at the rallies on May 1st. But I'm proud of Unite here. They're not avoiding this issue. They're facing it head on, and they're pointing out what we all know to be true, which is that the hotel industry is reaping record profits, billions and billions of dollars in profits, off the backs of immigrant workers, many of them undocumented. And, many people try to talk around this issue and not face it head on, this union's doing it head on. They're showing respect. They're not new to this. They did the Freedom March last year. I just think it's a very principled response to some of the hysteria that's going on, especially on CNN lately.
And I'm excited that your group can work with these immigrant groups and Unite Here to try and get a bigger focus for everybody who's stepping to the table. Everybody who, you like you said, $60 billion just from your community alone, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. I think we're beginning to see a real change in the gay community on the immigration issue. I was very excited to see that Matt Foreman, the executive director at the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, just issued, I think last week, a really well-thought-out statement about the importance of alliances between the LGBT communities and the immigrant rights organizations. So this is, I hate to express any kind of optimism because it always gets shot down so quickly, but I think that we're seeing a lot of signs of hope. I think many people all across the country, gay and straight, black and brown and white, and people from all different backgrounds and struggles are realizing the importance of working together now with a great sense of urgency and solidarity to take this country back. The damage that has been done by Bush and Cheney and Roe and these people is incalculable. We cannot allow this to continue. So, and you know, this isn't just for activists and politicians. Every person that is listening to this can be part of this process, can be part of actively seeking out ways to support each other in these different struggles. It can be as simple as the conversations you're having around the water cooler at your place of work, or signing up to volunteer to walk precincts in November. Whatever you can do, do it.
Well, thank you, Cleve, for joining us. And tell us again, how do we get in touch with Sleep With The Right People?
It's www.sleepwiththerightpeople.org. It's all spelled out, no spaces in between, just sleepwiththerightpeople.org. And I'd be delighted to get emails from any of your listeners who heard this broadcast.
Thank you, Cleve Jones. And you're welcome to stay online because we have joining us Ann Montague from SEIU Local 503. Are you there, Ann?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Ann, maybe you can tell us a little bit about what SEIU has done to try and bring some civil rights for the gay community into their contracts.
Well, our local here in Oregon really started something in about the middle 80s, and now we've kind of moved to, we actually have what we call ourselves the Lavender Caucus, which is a caucus within the union, and we actually have a national Lavender Caucus through SEIU. So we really just started with first getting non-discrimination in the contract, then moved to working against the anti-gay initiatives, then worked to get domestic partner coverage, and did a stewards training. So, I mean, I'd be glad to talk about each one of those if there's one you're particularly interested in.
And when did this whole thing start?
Well, I'm trying to think. It was about the middle 80s, and the first thing we did was to get non-discrimination in the contract. And at that time in our local, there was extremely a democratic way to introduce issues into bargaining, which is we had a bargaining conference, and all you had to do was get people to, you know, sign that there was a change they wanted in the contract. So all you had to do is really be organized. So we did, and I think we took like 52 sheets of paper, which was more than any other issue, to that conference, and a lot of people were pretty surprised. But we have always had the support of our executive director, who at that time was Alice Dale, and she said, well, clearly this has to be a priority in bargaining. And so we bargained it, and that was kind of our first success, so we were kind of emboldened after that.
And what does the Lavender Caucus do now?
What we did, the next thing really that we did was we moved to, let's see, what was the next? The next thing we did was we wanted to look at stewards, developing a stewards training. And we really lucked out. And one of the things, we had a lot of advantages, I think. And one of them is that there were a lot of gay people in the international staff. Not very many open, but there was one lesbian who was very open in the international staff, and her job was to help locals develop trainings. So when we contacted her and said, this is what we need to do, I mean, she was, of course, really into it because it was really a first at that time. And so we developed the training, and we looked, first of all, at, we didn't really want to do a kind of a, you know, get in touch with your homophobia kind of a thing. We wanted to address stewards professionally for what it is that they do, which is represent workers in their area. So the main thing we did was we were able to collect examples of gay and lesbian discrimination that had actually occurred in various locals. And we used, so we broke down into small groups, and you have stewards saying, okay, is this a union, is this a contract violation? If not, how would you address it? So that they saw that there were real life issues that occurred. And it was very, and when we did it, I did it a couple times. We did one for the staff also, and it was really successful. And it happened that that stewards training was at the same time as Lon Mabon started introducing his anti-gay initiatives. So the timing was really good. Excellent. And so that really was another thing that really buoyed us because of the viciousness of the anti-gay campaign. So that helped us in terms of the members, I think, with the members, because they saw, you know, what was going on.
Well, your local represents about 35,000 workers in the state of Oregon.
I think that's about what it is.
You may be the biggest. I think you might just be the largest local in the whole state.
I don't know if we're larger than teachers. But, yeah, we are. We're certainly one of the. We certainly are one of the locals. And there are two SEIU locals in Oregon. I'm with 503 that represents, well, we represent a lot of people. We represent state workers, county workers, public private nonprofits, home care workers. It's quite a few. You know, I wanted to say there was one thing that was really interesting, which was when we started talking about these issues within the union, and it was around all the anti-gay initiatives. And, you know, I was talking to somebody one day, and I said, you know, you just don't know what it's like to every day you open up the newspaper and you read lies about who you are, you know, and kind of laughed. And he said, well, it's kind of like being public employees, because Sizemore had just been on his, you know, anti-state worker, anti-public worker rant. And so there was kind of a connection there because people knew what it was like those days when they'd open up and there was something else about public workers or whatever. So we kind of could use what the union was going through to kind of relate to, you know, who we are. So
now, from what I understand, the national office of the SEIU has taken a stand on these issues too, haven't they?
Yes. Well, what happened was we kind of started here, and at the same time, we were organizing, they were organizing in California. And so we used to have these Western conference meetings, which SEIU doesn't have anymore. So we all kind of connected, and so we made kind of a Western district, I think they're called, the Western District Lavender Caucus. And then from there, we worked to get a national Lavender Caucus. And I have to say another thing that was really important was that Mary Kay Henry, who was the SEIU staff person that helped us develop the training, she was also involved in external organizing, which was a big area, and a big area for Andy Stern when he was working with John Sweeney, who was the president. And she always had their ear, and particularly John Sweeney. I think she did some one-on-one education with him on this issue. So it was kind of to our advantage that we had some openly gay international staff people who were sort of at the level to, you know, to educate on this issue and why it was important. And then when Andy Stern ran to be the president of SEIU, it was part of his platform was the support of our caucus and all the caucuses too, the African American caucus and the Latino caucus too.
Great. And you are listening to Labor Radio here on KBOO in Portland. This is your guest, Kevin Card. You were just listening to Ann Montague with SEIU Local 503. And if you don't know what an organizer sounds like, when you hear someone say a one-on-one discussion or a one-on-one campaign, they're an organizer. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, and so I believe that the national office of the SEIU also came out pretty forceful on the gay marriage issue during the last election cycle.
Good. I did not hear that. I did not really hear that. And I think one of the things that I do want to say, and like I said, we had support because we had Alice Dale as our executive director. She understood why this was a union issue, why it was important to give us the support that we needed, why it was important to contribute money for these initiatives. But we always have to be organized, and we have to always remind people that that's the position of our union. And it sort of never stops. Like our stewards, the stewards training that we do, we have to constantly push. It hasn't been done for a while, so we have to kind of say, hey, here we are, you need to do this, or things will come up. And it's really important, I think, that we can't ever live kind of let up, because our issue is very easy for them to put back in the closet. So we have to totally always be there. And another thing I think that really helped with us was when we started, the people who started the Lavender Caucus were all union activists. So people already knew us. We've been on the bargaining team. We'd worked for pay equity. We've been on everybody else's issues. And I think that that gave us more credibility. I mean, it shouldn't have, but it did. It gave us more credibility that if some rank and file person, you know, started coming to the board and say, we need to act on this issue. So I think that's something that really helped us. And I realize that a lot of unions are just, you know, at a different place in what they're able to do. And, I mean, if there's any time anyone wants to, you know, contact us, then you can just, you know, call the SEIU office and get my number. I mean, I'd be glad to talk to anyone that's struggling at a different stage of organizing, because I know it's difficult. And domestic partner coverage, that's another issue that can be a difficult one. The argument that we used for that was that you can have two workers sitting side by side, and they have different levels of benefits. And it's kind of the equity issue, you know. And so that's how, you know, eventually that worked too, and we got that. So,
have you been able to insert non-discrimination language in most of your local contracts?
Yeah, I believe what happens now is that our local has like a template that is like for the first contract, because we're really on an external organizing, I won't say binge, but it's a real big issue for us. And so there's like a template of the things that need to be in that first contract. And the non-discrimination language is in there. And whenever there's non-discrimination, it includes sexual orientation. But, you know, we're going to continue to be visible. And our caucus now is putting out a brochure that will go out into every new orientation packet, so it'll go to every new member. And actually, we're doing it in combination with the Latino Caucus and the African American Caucus, and through our Civil and Human Rights Committee. So there'll be contact numbers. So anyone who's a new member will get that brochure, and they will know that this is a union committee. And if they need to contact us, then, you know, then they can.
Have new members been receptive of this?
We're just putting it together now, so we haven't done it. But, you know, it's very difficult, of course, it always is, for gay people to find a way to reach everybody who's out there. And one of the things about the anti-gay initiatives is that our ranks swell greatly. Whenever there's organizing, whenever there's a big issue, I mean, we really, really had a lot of support. And then it kind of wanes, where it goes down to there, you know, not so many people involved. But we still have to be there as a resource for people, you know. And the staff is very supportive generally, but there's so much turnover that sometimes the new staff. I kind of think we need to do the education, you know, because we have a staff training that's aimed particularly at staff as well as one for the stewards.
Well, Ann, when I saw you yesterday morning when you were queuing up with your, was that a purple truck you drove through it?
Yeah.
In the Pride Parade yesterday?
There is a truck. It wasn't mine, but there was a...
I think so.
Yeah, there. We did have a truck, and the sign, I'm trying to remember what it said, something like queer, what did I say? Queer by, it's not, it wasn't birth. It was, queer by luck, union by choice. I think that was the slogan we were using. Yeah, yeah.
It was great. But one of the interesting things when I first met you was I noticed you were wearing your Pride at Work hat.
Mm.
And sitting across me in the air room is Joe Keir.
Oh, hi, Joe.
Hi, Ann. How are you doing?
Good.
Excellent.
And Joe is going to talk to us now a little bit about his history and how Pride at Work came to be in Oregon, kind of its local and national history, and how what role he's played in trying to get this community together to work as one.
Great.
And you might be able to help me on some of this in terms of our history, but the... Pride at Work, Kevin, is one of the affinity groups that's affiliated with the AFL-CIO. The AFL-CIO has several national affinity organizations. One is the Coalition for Labor Union Women. There's the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists and also the A. Philip Randolph Institute, the Latin American Coalition for, or I guess the Labor Coalition for Latin American Advancement. Several organizations that are... affiliated to the AFL and sponsored by the AFL nationally in order to promote membership with an awareness of these issues. And Pride at Work was chartered as one of these organizations in 1999. But there was some history before that. SEIU was very central to the creation of Pride at Work. I remember, Ann, I think it was one of the national lesbian and gay marches in D.C., and I think maybe in 97, where after that we met at the SEIU hall in D.C. and talked about the formation of a national organization and eventually came up with the support of the AFL-CIO and adopted the name Pride at Work. So Pride at Work is open to members of AFL-CIO unions, to members of other unions, and to people who aren't members of unions but want to promote this synergy between labor and the lesbian, gay, transgender community. The issue is we have a lot of folks who are not represented, are working where they don't have the benefit of labor protections because they don't have a union contract, and at the same time, they're also being discriminated against, likely because of their orientation, their sexual orientation. They need help. And so from the beginning, Pride at Work has been very instrumental in helping with organizing drives to get people in these situations, in union situations, so that they can have some protections. At the same time, there's been a huge amount of education that has been done within the union movement to make these issues something that all union members are aware of. There's, like Ann was saying, there's anti-discrimination issues that need to, and harassment issues. Harassment has been an issue from way back. There was a case of a union member in the UAW in Detroit Chrysler plant who went through a lot of harassment, eventually was able to overcome it with the help of some African-American union members and ran for office and was elected a steward and became active in the union. But there's a history of discrimination and harassment that we need to overcome within the union movement. So the purpose of Pride at Work is twofold: to encourage people who are outside of the union movement who want to belong or want to help on these issues, and at the same time to educate within the union movement that these are issues that are important for the civil rights of everybody.
Dan, you are listening to Labor Radio here on KBOO in Portland. This is your host, Kevin, and I'm here with Joe Keir and Ann Montague, and we're talking about the intersection of the labor and the gay movements and what they can do to make work sites better for all Americans.
You know, Kevin, I just, you know, talking about some of our history in terms of the labor movement and lesbian and gay activists, the labor movement has been led or included activists who are lesbian or gay from way back. We have a really good example in Bayard Rustin, who was head of the A. Philip Randolph Institute, was the person who was the principal organizer of the 63 March on Washington. And he was a gay man who understood that the most important issue that he was dealing with was the discrimination as an African American, and that's where he put his energies. But we also had an SEIU member, Harry Hay, who was one of the leaders of the Mattachine Society before Stonewall, that was working on these issues. He came out of SEIU back then. And in more recent history, in San Francisco, Howard Wallace, who was from SEIU, in the early days after Stonewall, organized a labor gay coalition. It was for union members who were lesbian or gay, and did a lot of education around that. I remember, because I was living in Miami during the Anita Bryant campaign against gay rights. It was against the ordinance that had been passed by the Dade County commissioners, non-discrimination ordinance. Anita Bryant led a campaign that was successful in overturning that, but there was a big get-out-the-vote campaign among a coalition of lesbian and gay activists. It was called the Dade County Coalition for Human Rights. Howard Wallace came from San Francisco and deliberately did as much outreach as he could and tried to direct that coalition to do outreach to labor unions. So that's 1977. That's early in our history of trying to get the union movement to be aware of this issue and embrace it as one of our issues in terms of supporting civil rights. The union movement has always been very good in terms of supporting civil rights, and this is another example where the union movement has come through.
I do think, though, that it's always taken a little bit of an education program, and that's what Ann was talking about earlier. I'm a rank-and-file union member myself, and I know that, you know, on a workroom floor there's a lot of discussion that goes on, and it takes an enlightened leadership to be able to overcome that and to be able to talk to people. And And especially, Ann, one thing that I found impressive with SEIU that you said is that you have stewards training on this issue, which I think is imperative, because it's very, a steward, at least in my line of work, they're looked up to, okay? They're the I call them the samurai of our union, right? They're the ones who stand up and talk, you know, get in front of the boss when they're getting in your face. And so it's a respected position, but I do think it takes quite a bit of education to get people to start thinking about this as a civil rights issue.
Right, right. No, I think that's right. And the stewards training, I mean, we really tried to use, we had got some examples, I should say great examples, I mean terrible examples of what had happened. And one of them was that at the University of Oregon, there was a gay man who was being harassed where he was working, and he went to the steward, and the steward told him that he should put in to transfer out of that area. So, I mean, it's a real good reflection about how stewards don't really want to deal with it. And we also did a section on how to be an ally, and we talked about the fact that gay people have very good hearing. And so, you know, if they hear a steward, you know, laughing at a gay joke or whatever, you know, they're never going to go to you, you know. So you can't really represent those workers. And so that was another part of it that I thought was worked out pretty well. But we still, you know, we don't want to paint, you know, this gray picture. I mean, we're constantly, it's constant education. I mean, we have, like, you know, what, 20,000 members. So, you know, every once in a while we hear about things, and we try to remind the staff they need to come to us to help them deal with them, because, you know, we're not going to be able to change everybody's mind, but they should at least have to talk to a gay person in that area about, you know, why what they're saying is affecting them.
So the Lavender Coalition actually acts as a go-between in some of those cases?
Yes, and we try to encourage the staff people. Of course, we have you know, staff members that work with our caucus. But, because sometimes we are the first ones to hear. They'll call. They don't know where else to call. And when there's an instance happening, and we've before had to take it to the board to, to deal with the situation. My favorite story was with Michael Krivosh. I don't know if everybody knows who he is. He was an organizer around our first strike, and he had been an industrial organizer in the South, a really big guy. And he had heard that there was some grumbling about people leaving after we supported the first anti-gay initiative, that people were going to, you know, resign their membership someplace out in Eastern Oregon. And he always tells a story about how he admits it, his own homophobia. Well, he put on his lumber shirt and he put on his jeans and he went out there and he met with them and basically told them, you know, why these are union issues, people's civil rights. And he said, you know, a couple of them still withdrew their membership. But, you know, that thing of not ignoring, but just going out, where is it? You go right to where the problem is and address it out in the open as opposed to trying to ignore it. And that was pretty, I think that's pretty unusual for a union staff person to do.
We've had a lot of progress, I think, Ann. If you think back over your history in the labor movement, there's been really a sea change in terms of this issue, I believe.
Yeah.
We've got the AFL-CIO unions in support of this affinity group. When we first started in Oregon, we got the support also of the Southwest Washington Labor Council, the Clark, Skamania, and West Klickitat Central Labor Council. And a lot of unions have come on board. You can talk to the firefighters and a number of unions that have taken progressive positions. So this is a lot different than it was 15 years ago.
Right.
We've made progress, but we do have the education to do. And that's the point of Pride at Work and these different caucuses within the unions. You want to be able to have a reminder to union leadership that these are issues that are important to be on the table. We need to have non-discrimination. We need to have benefits. And we need to have the sensitivity to dealing with a diverse population in the workplace. It's not the same as it used to be years ago, and workplaces can't be the rough and tumble environment that they used to be years ago. There has to be an awareness of people's rights on the job.
Right.
Well, Joe, you spoke about Pride at Work. Can you tell us what Pride at Work is, how it kind of got off the ground, and what it's doing today?
Pride at Work was, as I said, founded as a constituency group for lesbian and gay union members or lesbian and gay, transgendered, or bisexual folks who wanted to participate in this effort but weren't union members, in order to educate within the ranks of the union movement, but also outside of the union movement, people who needed some protections would like some help from this organization. It was originally involved in a number of issues, but most importantly was trying to promote the idea of putting domestic partner benefits within the contracts that all the different unions were negotiating. But Pride at Work from early on was involved in a lot of issues. There was the situation at Cracker Barrel, the chain of restaurants that was discriminating against gays, ended up having to overturn their policy, but Pride at Work was involved in following up on that. There was a lot of activity, and there still is, in regards to Walmart and the anti-union campaigns that Walmart runs that prohibit people from organizing among the associates or workers at Walmart. And Pride at Work has been involved in a lot of public campaigns or protests or just organizing efforts at different Walmart sites. And there's a real interesting a connection at the National Pride at Work webpage where you can find out more about the Say No to Walmart pledge. And Pride at Work, by the way, is www.prideatwork.org. A lot of good connections there. You can find out about the campaign Sleep with the Right People from Pride at Work. You can also join Pride at Work. As I said, it's open to anybody who wants to support this important synergy between the labor movement and lesbian and gay, transgender, and bisexual rights. And joining is pretty simple. You, as I said, you don't have to be a member of a union. You just want to help with this cause, and you can simply volunteer as an individual. They will accept a donation of $25 to belong as an individual. If you don't have that, you can still join. And you can do that at the web page, or you can contact us locally. Pride at Work locally is at P.O. Box 4731, Portland, Oregon, 97208. That's P.O. Box 4731, Portland, Oregon, 97208. Or you can call 503-757-8907. and ask how you can be involved. Our chapter has not been real involved since before the last election. A lot of the folks were involved in the last presidential election and put a lot of energies there. Before that, we did have some regular meetings at the Communication Workers. We had a number of programs. We had a really good video on Bayard Rustin. And we kicked off our first program was by our co-chair, Krista Orth, who had in college done a paper on the history of labor and lesbian and gay issues at the in the history of Oregon and Washington. So it covered some of the local history that most of us really don't know about. And it's important to know that we have some history, and we have a long tradition of lesbian and gay activists in the union movement.
Well, let's get back one more thing. You were talking about domestic partner language. And it seems to me like it that not only have unions advocated for it, but they've done a good job of educating politicians, especially here in Oregon, where we've had mayors and town councils, and I believe even the governor has come out in favor of this kind of legislation, hasn't he?
This is maybe.
It's the kind of thing, though, that it takes a lot of synergy to make it happen. I was just thinking of Joe's talking about how Pride at Work gets going, and it looks to me like the organizing model that's been used for Working America, where we are taking non-union members throughout the community and inviting them to join a loose-knit organization to fight for better workplace stuff. It seems to me like there's a natural partnership here.
Well, you know, yeah, but I really think it's important. There's so much work to do, you know, it's because even when you get domestic partner coverage, it's not equal. Because of the IRS laws, the federal laws, that value of the health insurance is added in to your income.
Right.
And so it's taxed. So you pay where someone who is a spouse and has coverage or has coverage for children, it's totally different with domestic partner because it costs, it comes out of your paycheck. Well, in our case where you don't, like our state workers, they don't have to pay a premium every month out of their paycheck. They pay in co-pays in other ways. But if you have domestic partner coverage, it is reducing your take-home pay. And so ultimately we're going to have to work towards, this may not be the best political time to do it, but we're going to have to work towards changing both the Social Security laws and the IRS laws. And I think it's really going to be up to the labor movement really to spearhead a lot of that, because those are really, I think, working class, you know, real working class issues. And so there's just so much to do, and it's like everything else. People have to come out. That's what we really need. We need our union members to come out and support us.
Well, I think this gets back to what our first guest, Cleve Jones, was saying, that all these communities need to converge to take America back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be easy. We will have a chance. We're going to have a chance. We have another election year staring us in the face. I'm sure that every organizer and every union is kind of scratching their head right now, taking a breath before we dive into these midterm elections. And then after that, you know, the big election in a couple of years. But where do you see, Joe, where do you see Pride at Work fitting into this whole thing?
Well, Pride at Work has been kind of at the forefront of some of our issues in terms of the labor movement and even the lesbian and gay movement. For example, there were some hesitations on the part of some of the lesbian and gay organizations like the National Gay Lesbian Task Force to come out explicitly against the war in Iraq. And at the same time, our unions were not coming out in great numbers and addressing this issue as a working class issue. And early on, Pride at Work was one of the organizations among labor and among the lesbian and gay activist organizations to take that stand. Since we've seen most of our unions have taken a strong stand saying this is not in the interest of working people, the war in Iraq is not being waged to support us, it's being waged for other reasons, and we want to bring our members who are serving back to safety, and we don't want to see us, for instance, the Oregon AFL Convention passed a resolution calling for the immediate return of our Oregon National Guard and returning eventually all of the troops, for the reason that the war was not in the interest of working people. It's in the interest of the oil cartel and some cronies of the Bush administration. Well, that's an example of pride at work kind of being out front. It's the synergy between the lesbian and gay movement and labor, which I think can be somewhat of a signal for where both need to be going.
You agree with that, Ann?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, I mean, I really think that in terms of being the vanguard and out there and talking about working issues, is, you know, there's no doubt about it that Pride at Work is there, and other out gay people are seem to always be on the progressive end of pushing the unions. Because I always say the most conservative part of the union is their political arm. Because they've been so in bed with the kind of traditional middle-of-the-road Democrats that we kind of have to push them. And that's one area we've been working on right now, which is we're supposed to have questions on gay and lesbian civil rights to be part of the questions for all of the candidates. And unless we're right there on top of them, it just gets dropped. And so we have to be there, because that establishes, when we're interviewing those candidates, that establishes where the union stand is clearly.
So. Well, you know, that's an interesting issue you bring up there, Ann, because my own union has just been developing that exact same language. You know, what do we do for the next crop of candidates who we're going to endorse? And it's been important, you know, it's an important issue to have in there, that non-discrimination. You have to know where they stand, you know, on all of these issues. Sure, it's about workers' rights, but it's civil rights go right along with it, and that is a workers' right.
Mm-hmm. And if we do, I mean, lots of times that's sort of the committee that gets, I mean, we have to have people on there. We have,
right.
Because it won't happen. It won't happen unless gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual people bring that up, and you have to be on those boards and on those committees to be able to get it first, put the input that the question needs to be there, and then make sure that when that questionnaire comes out that it's there.
You know, it's not just the lesbian and gay transgender issues, it's also our union issues. We want to say you're not going to get our endorsement from
right.
the union movement unless you'll commit to supporting our right to organize.
Right.
If you will not put your name on the Employee Free Choice Act, that you will be a supporter of that, you're not getting our endorsement. That's an example that I think, you know, the Machinist Union, but a lot of unions are now being rather forceful in saying you're not going to get our endorsement until, bottom line, you do something for us.
Well, I think SEIU definitely took a great position in making people accountable. And in this case, of course, it was Kulongowski. But, you know, I mean, that was a big, big moment to really go out there and say, no, you know, you can't take us for granted anymore. And I think other unions are doing that, too. They're saying, you know, you have to come through on these issues.
Right.
Not a cash cow. We're not an ATM machine.
Right. In the governor's defense, he was one of the first statewide officials to actually endorse the Employee Free Choice Act. And he's our candidate now in the coming election. But you make a good point, Ann.
Yeah.
We want to hold people accountable for all of their actions. And where they deviate from a program that's supporting unions or supporting civil rights,
mm-hmm.
we need to point it out and tell them they're not going to get continued support unless they do.
Right.
Ann, I need to be held accountable. I would like to thank very much Ann Montague.
Oh,
well,
glad.
Local
I enjoyed
503
it.
For joining us in this conversation. And Cleve Jones, who we talked to in California about the Sleep with the Right People. You can find that at sleepwiththerightpeople.org. And Joe Keir for coming all the way down here in his busy schedule to spend an hour talking about this important issue. And
that's www.prideatwork.org.
And I'd especially like to thank Lisa Loving for doing such a fantastic job of engineering all these guests here tonight. And remember, you can tune in every Monday night from 6 to 7 and catch Labor Radio here on KBOO.
KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from SEIU Local 503, OPEU, whose mission is to improve the quality of life through worker empowerment and a progressive labor movement, and whose members deliver quality public services to Oregonians every day. Also, Iron Workers, Shopman's Local 516, and the Pacific Northwest Iron Workers District Council proudly fighting to preserve living wage jobs and resisting their outsourcing. Information at 503-257-4743. Stay tuned for Time Sound with Kevin Berry.